Ketchup packets in McDonald's are so good. Have you ever noticed that ketchup is just especially thick? It's like it's got a little sweetness in it.
Yeah, because you have to work for it. You have to open the little thing.
I got it right. Exactly.
Squeeze it out.
Like, hold on to some extra ones because you just don't know.
Greetings, everybody. It's Monday, May 6th. We've got Chapo Trap House coming back at you today. And for today's episode, Felix and I are joined by a trifecta of Southern gentlemen. It's Tom, Aaron, and Terrence from the Trillbillies. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, boys.
Thanks for having us, y'all.
I guess to kick things off this week, over the weekend, the big story continues to be the ongoing protests against the war against Palestine. But this morning, I guess the big story today is the news that a ceasefire deal was reached. Hamas agreed to a ceasefire deal that's now no longer a ceasefire deal because the invasion of Rafah is going on as we speak. And I guess I'm seeing reports in the media, like from Reuters and other places, that are being pretty clear that that this ceasefire deal was not negotiated in good faith, and that the cause for the collapse of the ceasefire deal is Israel. I mean, and then we even have the Saudi foreign ministry basically begging Israel to stop doing this and to accept the ceasefire deal. And I guess I'll just begin with just in terms of the way this is going to be, the way this is already being covered in the press, in terms of being pretty clear about who doesn't want a ceasefire here. I guess it's hard to imagine this as some sort of turning point in how people perceive this. But what do we make of this aborted attempt at a ceasefire and how it's likely to be covered in the media?
Well, I just want to add too that as of I think this morning, after they've told people to evacuate Rafah, they've started bombing it, or in preparation for bombing it. Right. You know, so I don't know, man, it seems as if Tom has said this before, as the oppressor, the victim, right, always has to be kind of humble, right, in their suffering, you know, right? They're never supposed to be either militant or aggressive, right, in their resistance. So even the fact that Hamas has put forward a ceasefire, you know, I'm pretty fucking sure on the media, man, they're going to cover it as they didn't really want that anyway, right? You know, this is cynical, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I can imagine the way it's going to go is by Hamas agreeing to a ceasefire is making the end of this war impossible, because by wanting to stop this war, they're putting Israel in a position of having to continue to fight the war, and they really don't want to do that. Yeah,
dude, there was a headline like that today, I forgot what outlet it was, but the headline was basically I think this IDF general was saying that Hamas is making this war impossible to end because they're pursuing a ceasefire.
I'm interested to see what kind of position Fetterman's going to contort himself into on this one.
I think that it's interesting seeing the way that this was proposed two or three days ago. I think it was over the weekend, the New York Times had an article that was essentially is the gist that you've seen ad nauseum since November or October, which is that Israel wants to plow ahead. Biden is, this is very unfortunate. We have to have more conversations. We have to have more strong conversations. It was interesting to see, in that article, as this goes on, you can kind of see that what's really at stake here, honestly, is the United States is having an increasingly difficult time laundering the idea that it is about the hostages, that it's about Hamas. When I don't think Israel has to maintain that pretense. They don't really have that extra layer of obfuscation or ideological sort of mystification. They're not bound by that same thing. Whereas the United States,
they've killed half the hostages, you know?
Exactly. it's just interesting to fast forward to this point now where as I was reading that story, I was okay, I already know how this is going to go. There's no other way that this is going to end up. It's just, I don't know how many times we've seen this same playbook since November, but
I mean, I was thinking about this in the context of like what was perhaps perceived as another turning point a couple weeks ago. I was talking to Catherine about this over the weekend, but do you guys remember? It seems like a million years ago, but do you remember just from a couple weeks ago when Israel killed all those people from the World Center kitchen?
Yeah.
And I bring this up because like it was interesting to see the way the news media covered that, in that they like very immediately like assigned culpability to Israel for killing these people and like did not countenance any of their ridiculous like obfuscations or lies about like, well, you know, maybe it was Hamas who killed them. And they were like, dude, you shot three missiles at three different cars. And that was a turning point. And then there were like Israeli airstrikes kill World Center kitchen workers. But like the interesting thing about that is like they all accepted what had happened, but then there was no actual follow-up in terms of what that implies.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like it was just yeah. like, well, we all accept they did a triple tap airstrike on like the aid workers that the US and Israeli government officially let into Gaza to like feed people. Because I think to sort of like take that on, then they would have to like conclude that Israel killed like an American citizen and several other European passport holders because they were feeding people in Gaza. And like, as I see with this ceasefire deal, I mean, I think they're going to report like the basic bare facts of it, but I don't think that they're going to really follow up with any sort of acceptance of like what that implies.
Exactly. I mean, they won't contextualize it, right? I mean, dude, we saw this with like Shireen, right? The journalist who had been killed like a few years ago, you know, these events, or the hospital, right? Which Israel said, we would never bomb hospitals. And the U.S. media, they wouldn't bomb hospitals. And then, of course, you know, the same thing with any atrocity they've committed. Months later, media outlets do their investigations, you know? They're independent investigations. And they find out that, yeah, they actually did kill these people. But, I mean, all of these events are sort of atomized, you know? And they're, like, pulled out of historical context, you know? And I don't know, man. I know that people like to point to like, you know, 1948 is when this all began. But like sometimes even I myself, like today somebody posted like this headline that said Jewish settlers, you know, are willing, right, to kick people out of Palestine, you know, to have that land for themselves. And that was like in 1909 or something like that, you know. So I think even when we talk about this shit, like the sense of scale and historical context is lost. And I mean, I think that's on purpose, man. I think that obfuscation of context, you know, and like atomizing these events is to kind of overwhelm you with atrocity to atrocity, you know, without linking it all together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Speaking of a need to contextualize things, I'm wondering if you gentlemen saw the interview that was conducted over the weekend by Mitt Romney of Anthony Blinken, in which they state openly and very clearly that the problem with Israel's PR right now, the problem with like is that basically young people get their news from the internet and they see unfiltered images of this war, which creates an emotional resonance for them that is not bracketed by the proper mediation and context. And then Mitt Romney said, of course, that's why we moved so strongly to ban TikTok.
Yeah, a small parenthetical point, which is some wonder why there was such overwhelming support for us to shut down potentially TikTok or other entities of that nature. If you look at the postings on TikTok and the number of mentions of Palestinians relative to other social media sites, it's overwhelmingly so among TikTok broadcast. So I'd note that's of real interest, and the president will get the chance to make action in that regard.
I mean, this is. I mean, he's speaking to a generation that like is still using a landline, and they got a rotary phone at home. You know what I'm saying? The shit that you got to like use your finger to like, you know, make calls to. I mean, that's just, I don't even know what to say about that.
I'm trying to reach Klondike 5, 5, 5, 6, 8 Klondike.
I like Romney on his way out. Just, you know what I mean? Like last 2 weeks on the job, just like, yeah, fuck it. That's why we banned TikTok, by the way.
I mean, I don't even know, dog. Like, I think that's like, I hate to say mask off because I know that's an overused term, but it really does feel like they're just so blatant about it now. You know what I mean? Like, there's no more like pretense, right? As to like, because I feel like, all right, maybe before October 7th, right? Any attempts, they're still talking about TikTok being like, you know, Chinese propaganda, right? But it's sort of like now they're like, nah, I mean, yeah, we are racist, you know what I mean?
but we just don't want you to know anything, you know? You know what I mean? Like, we think you should be treated like the children that you are. Like, when we fucking lie to you, you should just eat that slop up, you know?
I was thinking about that. It's interesting you brought up the bombing, the murder of those World Kitchen employees, because I was thinking about that. It very quickly, because I felt the same way, like this is a sort of pivot in a way. This is a sea change or a watershed event or whatever. And you had to be skeptical about it, right? Because it's like, you know, they may appear that they're changing tact or changing some sort of sense of like what is right and wrong here or decency or whatever. But in some ways, I kind of feel like their overreaction to the campus protests was their way of pivoting out of that. It's like, okay, well, maybe we got a little too out of hand there. We wrote a few too many headlines that accidentally said Israel murdered those World Aid Kitchen supporters. We got to actually go full throttle against the college students and just turn this whole...
Yeah, we got to beat up kids now.
Yeah, we got to turn this into a spectacle to like reverse course. We may have actually criticized them just a little bit.
No, that's so, I mean, I don't know, not to repeat myself, man, but it just feels like when you have such an unpopular, I don't even want to call it a war, right? It's a genocide, right? I guess the way that media has to work, you know, the mouthpieces of empire, you know, is that like they have to inundate you with spectacle after spectacle. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like they're turning one of the worst atrocities, you know, of the 21st century into like this fucking MCU shit. You know what I'm saying? With new installments where every fucking week, you know what I mean? It's like you're supposed to be outraged by something fucking else, you know?
I'm hearing reports that Columbia students have broken windows at Hamilton's Hall with Thor's hammer.
With Mjolnir, however you pronounce that.
Yeah, Mjolnir or whatever. The student protesters have gained access to Mjolnir, and we need immediate intervention by the NYPD.
We need Mark Hamill to come down in whatever fucking shit. In the Millennium Falcon. I'm not even going to get started.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. How embarrassing. Is that dog shit? Oh my God. Having Mark Hamill do a fucking White House press conference. And this is when they're all saying, like, we don't have time to comment on anything else that's going on in the world.
But we're going to set out the Joker, though. We're going to set out the actual Joker to you. I hate that motherfucker, man.
I can't even repeat what he said, but you know what I'm thinking. What he called Joe Biden.
Yeah. What did he call? Wait, what did he call Joe Biden?
Yeah, well, I didn't see this.
Please repeat.
I don't even want to say it.
He said OB.
No.
I can't remember.
He said Joe. He said Joby.
Did he go on Joby. May the 4th or whatever? Did he do like May the 4th?
Yeah, it was May the 4th.
That was like the whole reason they did that video. I would have loved to have been the staffer that explains the concept of May the 4th. Joe Biden. There are these gay guys who call a war against the Empire. They're called E-Rocks. And we congratulate all LGBT who won in their struggle against Darth Vader. May 4th be with all of us.
I mean, this is why I don't like Star Wars. Now,
was he there for Ukraine or was he there for Israel? That was just the whole thing. It was just May 4th.
It was I mean, they probably like showed him some Ukraine stuff because he's a big Ukraine head. He's a multi fandom guy, but he's primarily Ukraine fandom. But it seemed like they only had him there to do like something that was from an XKCD strip in 2001.
but Felix, did you see that like he had done this stream with like, okay, I don't know if it was Azov Battalion, but I mean it was this right wing faction of the Ukrainian army, and like people had pointed this out. One of the guys on his screen, there was like a flag with, of course, like it was in a swastika, but it was something like that. You know what I mean?
I mean, like I don't critique other fandoms. honestly, like after all of this, it's just like whatever they. Ever since I saw that video in Ukraine, where like it was the Azov guys, and then the really like some of the most Jewish people we have ever seen. and they were like, they were dancing. I was like, well, I don't know. Like, maybe they figured it out. I, you know, like, that's your business. I've just, I think I, like, my heart has been moved because I've seen a bunch of people who have, like, all the Ukraine stuff in their bio. Like, they are, they, you know, just, like, the names of individual weapon systems and, like, all this stuff. I've seen them, like, yell at Joe Biden enough on Twitter that I'm like, eh, you know, do what you want. Except for Mark Hamill. He's not a good member of that fandom, of course. But
not sending their best.
Yeah. You know, I'm not throwing for a side in that conflict, obviously. I'm just saying, like, whoever put out the most recent video where they're dancing with Jewish people, I'll be kind to.
Be culturally sensitive.
Let's see where that goes.
They really looked like they were having a great time, all of them.
Well, to return to something you said a little bit earlier about how, like, we need to be sort of inundated with spectacle after spectacle to, like, you know, basically keep the conversation focused on anything other than the mass graves that keep turning up in Gaza. But, like, my favorite spectacle from over the weekend was due to the, like, fallout from the police raid of Colombia. Did you guys see, like, some like, comms person for the NYPD going on Newsmax and sharing evidence of what they found in Hamilton Hall? And he was holding it up for the camera, a copy of the Oxford University Press, a very short introduction edition. I mean, I said, a very short introduction to terrorism. And he was like, this is what our students are learning. I've seen so much stuff from the NYPD over the weekend, like from their Twitter accounts being like, someone is radicalizing our students and we need to find out who. It's like, aren't you just there to stop? Like, I mean, like, could you just arrest some people for beating the fare on the subway, please? Like,
go back to doing the other shit you used to do, right?
Of what concern is it to you what's being taught at Columbia University? And it's like, that's not a crime, dude.
I saw the account for the guy who's like head of patrol who, like,
yeah, that's the guy.
You know, I didn't agree with Rabbi Ovadia when he said Gentile for cattle. I said that was wrong to say, but then I saw this guy, the head of NYPD patrol, and, like, let me just say, if you were a bear, this guy would be incredible to eat. It would be like just catching a caged veal. It would just be amazing, you know. NYPD chief of patrol, John Chell. That even sounds like, you know, some like cow byproduct. Or like,
it really, you know, does. You know, it sounds like the shit that maybe collects, you know what I mean? In the fat
the slaughterhouse sluice of just
the pink slime. Yeah.
Exactly. So he said, "Good evening from NYC to Chicago, and I'm sure a few other cities. Who is funding this? What is happening? There is an unknown entity that is radicalizing our vulnerable students, taking advantage of their young minds. As parents and Americans, we must demand answers. I can't speak for the rest of America, but at NYC, we will find out. We will broadcast what we find. We will use the might of our intelligence bureau and our federal partners to quite simply connect the dots, follow the money." It's just like, I just hate the idea of, like, any cop, but especially like New York cops being like, this isn't a safe space for Jewish voices. Why are you trying to get rid of Hillel? Where can they go for Seder? It's like, shut up,
They've
man.
Got like the Cambridge short introduction of like Freud or something. They're just reaching a little too shallow with the terrorism one. You need like a short introduction of Freud or Buddhist ethics or something.
From New York to Chicago, psychology students are being taught that all boys want to have sex with their mother. I don't know about you, but that's not the values in New York City or Chicago.
It's just really funny to think that these like dumb motherfuckers who like have the collective intelligence of like 1,000 apes playing Candy Crush or some shit like that. You know what I mean? Like that these motherfuckers like really would pick up, hold up that book, you know what I mean? And present it. I would dare you to open up that book and point to any word or any sentence and tell me what that means. Yo. You have no idea what you're fucking doing. Yo.
Well, just the idea that like, if you wanted to get into terrorism, you'd be like, oh, I should like go to the library and see.
I got to get a good foundation before we start making bombs.
It's, you know? It's the exact same thing that the IDF was doing with like children's homes with like books about Hitler. It's just like, okay, yeah, that's my starting place.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone has any doubts about the close relationship between the Intelligence Bureau of the NYPD and the IDF, just look at their fucking media tactics. They had some goober trots out there. Someone told him about the pedagogy at Columbia, and he thought he was talking about Drake. Folks. I got to say... Deputy Commissioner Chell, but if, as long as you're talking about other bovine Americans who should be walking around with a fucking bell on their neck, let's talk about John Fetterman.
This guy, I mean, obviously, his
comments on Palestinians and college students, or we can leave that aside for the week, for the minute. But why is this guy like? Why is he putting lab grown meat in his crosshairs now? I'm like, Felix, I loved your point where he was like, he posted a photo of like the lab equipment that makes this lab grown meat, and he's just like, this is the goo they're trying to feed your kids. And then you posted like something that looks identical that creates Prozac. It's just the lab that creates Prozac.
It just it's such a like villager opinion. He's so much like one of the guys who like tries to kill the Witcher and gets struck down in one hit. He just sees any device and he's like, whoa, get it out of here.
It reminds me of this Arthur C. Clarke quote that any sufficiently advanced technology would appear to magic. You know what I mean? And he's like literally talking about something that is probably used in the manufacturing of any fucking thing, you know what I mean, in this country, you know what I mean?
It was just a really big tube. He saw a really big tube, and he's like, there's no telling what's going on in this. We've got to get this away from our kids.
This man has not consumed a calorie in his life that didn't come from a can or from like a fucking Stouffer Salisbury steak dinner. And he's like, I wouldn't feed that shit to my kids.
That pissed me off so much too, because it's like, okay, like, are we really putting like a American agribusiness made meat on the other side of slop?
Yeah.
It's like slop-like food in the world.
Bro, he might as well. That's like to me is like, so what you're doing defending, and I guess Ron DeSantis too, is you're defending the mass industrialization of slaughter.
Well, I mean, they're doing that in every other aspect of their
political
life.
Exactly. Well, exactly. I mean, that would be going like, I'm a smoker, but that would be going like to the Marlboro factory with a smokestack is a big ass cigarette. And pointing with your finger behind that, you know what I'm saying? And being like, yeah, thumbs up. You know what I mean? Like, we need to improve this industry and hire more workers for the baby killing factory. You
know? He should start a crusade against lab produced Prozac and antidepressants.
He's, you know, obviously like doing the thing where he likes getting credit from, I guess, all the DeSantis dead enders. Like all the people like that who are like still on Twitter. But like, you know, there's a limit. I think like you can say like terrible shit about immigrants in America, and like no one will really like ding you if you're a Democrat. People will be like, oh, he's smart. He's doing popularism.
Yeah.
But when you start taking on like all the other shit, even though it's like, you know, just on a moral balance, like, you know, not as bad to come out against Beyond Burger as it is to maybe come out against, like, you know, people who are fleeing for their lives. It's just so like, it's so transparent that like even the dumbest people are like, okay, we can see what you're doing.
It's not an issue, man. I mean, it's only an issue if you are like, I mean, it's literally like a partisan issue in the sense that like, I don't know. It just reminds me of climate change. You know, I mean, just like a denial, right? Of like, not even a denial of science. You know, I don't even say it's a denial of science, because I don't know if the people that like don't give a shit about Beyond Meat think that it's healthier for you, but it's obviously like a dog whistle, you know, like this very transparent shift and change to the right to oppose any sort of amelioration of suffering. I don't fucking know.
This is something I have noticed about the libs. They love dog whistles now. Like, I mean, I guess they've always probably done it to a certain extent, but like every single thing that they use now, like we've been talking about this on the show for months, but have y'all heard of this book called White Rural Rage by these two guys? They're like,
say that three times fast.
Yeah, they're like MSNBC like guys. Their whole thing is that like people in the rural areas are all stupid as shit, and we need to put them in gulags and like exterminate them. It's a very innovative.
Tell me, I would like to know more.
Yes, exactly.
I gotta hear both sides here.
It's a very innovative take, I have to say. I've never seen anyone say this, and I have to give them points for that because they finally came out and said it. But that whole book is like dog whistles, man. It's like it's all about like how people in rural America, they're taking all of our resources. They use the welfare queen stuff of like the Reagan years, and they apply it to people. It's basically J.D. Vance's whole thing with Hillbilly Elegy. But they've put it like a liberal sheen on it. And I feel like Fetterman's doing very much the same thing. It makes a lot of sense. I've met a lot of guys like Fetterman's in my life, like guys at the local municipal level who like position themselves as like progressive liberal guys and who are trying to get like breweries and that kind of stuff to your town. It's
just don't show John Fetterman like the equipment used to produce beer at a brewery. It's very frightening. It's a lot of giant steel drums.
Bro, I have more respect for Joe Biden when he saw the IBM quantum computer, and it, like somebody had a tweet that was like, "This is me at 12 a.m. looking like the hot dogs." You know what I'm saying? And like a Quick Trip or some shit like that. I had more respect for that because that's amazing. You know what I mean? I mean, that's a quantum computer, dog. I make a big game like I know science, dude. I know that shit, but it's cool. But you're just talking about like, I mean, just what looks like. Could be in a guy's garage, you know what I'm saying? Who's a tinkerer, you know what I mean? And to you, this is offensive, right?
Yeah.
It's just such a weird move for Fetterman to make, like, these broad cultural gestures to a type of, like, sort of consensus, common sense, cultural conservatism. Because it's like, okay, everything I knew about this guy during the senatorial election and before that, it's like, this is a guy that only exists in Democratic circles. Like, you know, both his parents worked for like Dow Chemical Bank, and he's, you know, the classic story where it's like a kid is smoking weed out of 7-Up cans until he's like 28. And then he, you know, one of his idiot friends dies in a swimming hole. And he's like, oh, I've got to get my life together. I'm doing Teach for America at 34. And he does that. Like, he's only worked for, like, NGOs and shit like that. Peace Corps. Parents paid for everything. They bought him a house when he was, like, 47, which is, like, crazy to me. I'm sorry. And then, like, now he's like, I'm just a good old fashioned good boy. I like a regular pig. No devices for me. And it's like you had not heard a radio station that wasn't NPR until you were like 39.
Yeah,
like I just so don't believe you.
I mean, like, whether it's Fetterman or the NYPD Combs Department, like we turn back again to this idea of like, there's something radicalizing these students. There's some sort of like foreign influence that's gotten into their brain and made them hate Israel. And like, I even love the language from Deputy Commissioner Chell, our head of the patrol division, where he says there's an unknown entity, you know, sort of like radicalizing students. We need to expose that entity.
A self-learning, truth-eating digital parasite. The entity.
And to that I said, yeah, it's not unknown entity. It's the Zionist entity and their good ally, Joe Biden, that is radicalizing these kids. And once again, it comes back to this idea that, like, it's never the thing that's actually happening. Yeah. It's like, and right. per Mitt Romney and Anthony Blinken's comments, it can never just be that they are mad about U.S. policy supporting this awful genocide. No, it's just that, like, they're getting they're getting information that's like irresponsible, or they're having an emotional reaction to seeing all these people killed. But I just wanted to, like, I would love someone to ask Anthony Blinken, like, okay, yeah, like you see these horrible images of like human suffering and misery on a scale that is just previously unimaginable. You feel, you have an emotional reaction to it, but like, what then is the responsible thing to do? Like, what do you want? Like, what's the context that you now want to like to be imbued to these people who are having an emotional reaction to this horrible violence?
But you know what, Will, I'll even put this up, man. So we've been seeing this hysteria, right? This fake hysteria from journalists who are saying, why won't these students talk to me? Why won't they talk to me? Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, one, because every time that they fucking do, you twist their words. But even when I mentioned this on the show, there was one reporter who went to the Columbia encampment, and there was actually a student who was designated to talk to reporters. And the student did their due diligence. Right. I mean, you shouldn't even talk to these fucking people. It's the same thing with cops. Just don't talk to them. Right. But explained, right, why they were out here. And in the report, right, in the final article that this reporter wrote, they said they spoke at length and nuance, right? So yeah. Even when they tell you what they're saying, you don't fucking write it down, right? So you know, these people are not, it's so, I mean, you know, not to repeat like a hack point, you know, everyone knows this, but I have to, it bears repeating though, they're so fucking disingenuous, right? Because they go in there pretending is that they don't know why people are out here. You know what I mean? They're pretending as if they don't understand the outrage, you know, so that they can use that lens to warp, right, an actual conversation, obfuscate it, you know what I mean? To feed it back to people, to make people think that you're a bigot, right, for standing against genocide, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Aaron, you're referring to Michael Powell of IDF Jeff's The Atlantic, and they sent him to Columbia. And they spend like, you know, he did speak at length to the designated spokesperson, who is a woman who told him that it's worse than like it gets worse, because not only did he not quote her, he just said, oh, well, she spoke at length and in a nuanced way. I'm not going to, you know, actually directly quote her. But then he said that like she told him that she had family who were killed in an IDF bombing in Gaza. And the way he wrote it in the article is he said that she had family who died in the fighting in Gaza, to make it sound like they were like combatants or something like that. And she was like, no, like they're so like, and I'm glad you brought this up, because the next thing I wanted to get to today is, have you boys been following the latest in the Theo Baker saga?
What
did you call him? Well, you called him bitch made is what you said.
I replied to his father, Peter, who was lamenting about the fact that no Columbia protesters wanted to talk to fucking Peggy Noonan, Peggy drunk by Noonan, glug, glug, glug. And I suggested to Peter that the protesters would do better to talk to his bitch made son. Now, this is Peter Baker was quoted, was screenshotted Peggy Noonan writing in The Wall Street Journal. And he said, and he wrote, when protests are not actually about explaining your cause or trying to engage journalists who are there to listen, Peggy Noonan describes her visit to Columbia before the raid. And what Peggy did is that she tries her best to make it sound like there's something sinister going on, where she's just like, she's sitting on a bench and she tries to get these two students to like engage her. And they just say like, oh, like, I'm sorry, I'm not media trained. And then she says to them, oh, don't worry, I'm barely trained myself. And then they were like, sorry, walk on. They were like, then she says they conformed. But like, she's admitting to lying to them. She's admitting, she has been an op-ed columnist for the last 40 fucking years. So for her to tell these students like, oh, I'm not really in the media. Like, I'm just here. Well, I'm just talking to you. But this idea that like they have, it's like, it's the journalist's job to get sources to talk to you. Right. And if if they're blackballing you, then like that's your job to get around that, or like establish a trust so that they will talk to you. But they're just getting mad. They're saying like this is totalitarian or conformist or whatever. And that they're just not, these protesters are not doing their job for them.
Bro, well, you know what they're about to start doing, son? They're about to start being saboteurs. You know what I'm saying? I they're going to start coming there, you know what I mean? With like with the kefias and shit like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're trying to be like, no, I'm one of you.
How do you do, fellow freedom activist?
How do you do, fellow genocide denier? Yeah, exactly.
It's just, it's if you're so repellent and non-charming that you can't get a fucking like 20-year-old to just open up to you about their thoughts and feelings, like maybe try a different profession. Like it might.
Peggy Noonan sitting on a park bench smelling like gin. Just like, God, I'm good.
Peggy Noonan approached them in a way where it's like, anyone with stranger danger training would be like, ah, get away, yeah, get away from me. This weird woman is trying to buy me.
Bro, this is the shit that you grew up with your whole life. Don't talk to strangers. Don't talk to the weird lady. You know what I'm saying?
I would have like, how was that supposed to go? Wait, like a fucking 19-year-old walks by the bench and is like, Peggy Noonan, the Reagan speechwriter? Yes, I have time for you.
So Peter Baker, Theo's father, you know, New York Times journalist, and like the funniest thing about this about Peter Baker is like one of his most famous one of the most like famous things that like people know about him is like he was a scab during the New York Times like the Times writers like a union drive. He was opposed to that, but also Peter Baker famously advertises the fact that he does not vote in elections because he feels it would tar his, you know, professional life as an objective journalist.
Pristine mind.
So hold up. That's okay for him. But when I say I'm not voting for this guy. Fuck out of here, dog. I need to write for the New York Times then, man.
Yeah. No, I'm just remaining objective in this election.
Yeah.
I'm remaining objective in that I don't care who wins it. I'm just doing what Peter Baker does. But anyway, so basically a professor at Stanford named Hakeem Jefferson quote tweeted Peter Baker, and he said, "It's interesting to see when journalists lean into objectivity and when those commitments fall away. I've consumed a lot of media regarding protests in recent weeks, and one of the most striking bits has been the near universal willingness to speak derisively about protesters." This guy is one of Theo Baker's professors at Stanford, from what I gather. And then Theo Baker, Peter's son, is immediately in this guy's reply, saying, "Not sure you understand what objectivity means, Hakeem. This is a ridiculous tweet, and I urge you to delete it." And then Hakeem Jeffries really, literally, just like published the receipts of Theo's emails to him, where he's just like, he's literally demanding that his professor delete tweets because it's like, not a good look, bro. Like, you know,
yeah. And he was basically like, "You need to delete this before Dad sees it. He is going to be furious."
You've no idea the hell Peter Baker can bring on you.
Oh my, yeah. Peter Baker is like the Tamerlane to Grubhub drivers on the Upper West Side. He's a scourge, a terrifying man. Peter Baker rerouted the East River to erase a particularly rude delivery driver's place.
Yeah. Any Grubhub driver taller than a wagon wheel, he just cut their limbs off.
Builds like a moat around his house with crocodiles in it or some shit.
And, you know, as far as objectivity goes, shout out to John Schwartz, who pointed this out to me. Objective reporter Theo Baker, wonder kid Jimmy Olsen of Stanford University, was in the weeks after October 7th was, you know, loudly and proudly circulating the 40 beheaded babies claim over and over again, and has not made any comments since then after it's been debunked thoroughly. He's made no mention of his role. Yeah.
By the way, right before we recorded, the New York Times just got awarded like a Pulitzer Prize award for international reporting for 2023 or something. Bro, like that.
So well earned.
Like, yeah, man.
Bro, it's like the White House correspondent dinner. Like last week was that? Like 2 weeks ago, you know what I mean? I mean, it really feels like sometimes like they're fucking with us, you know what I mean? Like sometimes the contradictions that exist, you know. And the way they exist that they do, I've said it on the pod before. Like, I don't understand how these people don't walk around and the contradictions don't cause them to like immediately just blow up. You know what I'm saying?
The fact
that you can like, you know, go ahead, Terrence.
Honestly, a lot of this kind of became clear for me. And I don't know if you'd planned to talk about this, Will, but a lot of it kind of became clear to me when I saw that Zadie Smith thing in the New Yorker this weekend.
I just pulled that shit up. Go ahead, Terrence.
I don't know.
I'm just going to say, man. Go ahead.
I don't know anything
she's
about
Zadie. She's about to lose some more teeth.
I don't
Shout out Andrea Long Chu for that joke.
Yeah, I don't know anything about her other than that she's been on the bookshelf of every person I've ever dated. And so I don't know if that's a positive thing or a negative thing. But
that was a red flag.
I've told so many lies about reading her work.
I did the same thing. I was like, I love Zadie Smith. That's the thing that Brett Gelman calls himself, right?
Call me Zadie. Call me Zadie. Yeah.
But you know, like for real though, the reason why it's so like, I just want to point out people like her, people like Jeanine Perrine or whatever, the White House spokeswoman. Whoever it was, whoever black person was that voted, you know, against like this UN resolution, like all of these people, right?
The UN ambassador, yeah.
Ambassador, right? Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly, right? All of these people, man, like Zadie Smith is this kind of perfect encapsulation of representation in like literature, media, right? Instead of like actually like engaging with political issues, you know, I don't know, man, like I love literature and I think about people like Ursula K. Le Guin, you know, and I think about like, what if she was alive, what she would have to say about the shit. And I just have to say, there were so many writers, you know, who I like love Zadie Smith work. I mean, my parents are from Jamaica, so I saw characters in White Teeth that I often didn't see in other shit that I'd read, you know. And just the fact that these people, like, I just want to read this quote, man, from the piece that that she wrote, man, because it's like this perfect example of just word gibberish, like, yeah, to create this sort of mythical nuance that isn't really there, right? She said, quote, Israel-Palestine is in fact perhaps the most acute example in the world of the use of words to justify bloody murder, to flatten and erase unbelievably labyrinthine histories, and to deliver the atavistic pleasure of violent simplicity to the many people who seem to believe that merely by saying something, they make it so. And I'm just saying, like, what the fuck are you talking about?
That, bro? Friend, is the wages of the MFA program.
Like the last part is so funny to me because it's just like, aren't you a writer?
Isn't your job clarity? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And to be incisive and not to actually weaponize language to confuse people. And as
well, I mean, not just that, but the part where she's like, they think by saying things they can make it so. They think that if they say their opinions, they're true because they believe in them, and it's like, yeah, that's sort of been the case for like the entire history of language.
Yeah.
People generally believe the things that they say.
It reminds me exactly of the same like seemingly profound but actually complete drivel that like Nate Silver, like his comments last week about like, you know, most people form their political beliefs based on like the culture, community, and people around them rather than like first principles or reason. And it's just sort of like, wow, no shit, dude. Thanks for that sterling insight there.
Exactly.
But like, I saw something like, Aaron, to your point though, I saw Osita Nueva, a friend of the show, he posted something about this that like he wrote a while ago that like about the Zadie Smith thing, where it's just sort of like, as a writer, like your job is to like say what's true, right? And I think so many writers just get in this like trap of like, oh, like the truth, like it can't possibly be that simple. And that the idea that they're always expecting to be rewarded for, I don't know, like, finding complexity and like, you know, obviously like there is complexity in everything, but like, it's an obvious dodge when people pretend that like, oh, like, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to be wrong about, you know, like the consequential issues of our time, or like
there's a lot of reasons to be a pussy and a coward.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. There's so many pitfalls to being right too stridently.
It's, the thing is I genuinely have to see her comments, and I mean, it's not even subtext, it's literally in the article, but it is a response to the protesting students. So I have to almost think of it as like her saying, like, the students have gotten too smart. They've learned too much, and they're now bandying about they're now bandying about terms like settler colonialism. And the thing is, and we've talked about this on the show, I mean, the whole concept of settler colonialism, there's been like a whole moral panic over it. You've seen no less than like 20 think pieces a week from the Atlantic in New York or in New York
it
Times.
It was even
about
used
it.
Against Drake in the beef with Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, Kendrick was like, yo, I'm tapping in, yo, I got you.
Yeah. The thing is, it's like, I'm not here to really argue the merits of the whole framework and concept in and of itself, because I don't even really know what it is. However, I do have to say, like, what I think so many people find so alarming and what they hate about it so much is that it, among all the ideas and frameworks, ideologies on the table, is really the only one I've seen that hints at a future, just that there would be a future where any of this stopped. That there would be some way forward out of this, that we're not just recycling through the past and repeating all of our past mistakes. The fact that it just has even a hint of a future, people are like, oh, get it away from me. I don't want to fuck you. Anything to do with it. And then they have to immediately just slander it. And you know what I'm saying? It's people who should know better, too, obviously, like Zadie Smith. Like, she's not an idiot. She's not an idiot. She's not an imbecile. Like,
yeah. No, Terrence, that's such a good point, yo, because, like, we've talked about it on the show, man, about, like, why this is such, like, you've mentioned, such a hinge issue that everything kind of circles around that seems to be, like, the main contradiction right now. And, like, I do think it has to deal with, like, a future, right? Like, I don't know, man. I think a lot about, like, you know, my family being from Jamaica, like, sort of in the 60s and 70s, all of these formerly colonized countries, right, and Latin America and Caribbean especially and across Asia, who were throwing off the shackles of their imperialism, right? And sort of like this mean that they had to create like a new flag and a new cultural, like a song, you know what I'm saying? Like a new anthem and all of these, like, I don't know, I guess to say, like, these sort of like almost
community building projects. Sort of, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Community building projects, but also like a renewal, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I think that to indict Israel, right, would be to indict the United States. And they can't allow that future. They can't allow that window, right? That aperture of what a post-colonial future looks like, whatever that may mean to you, right? But it certainly doesn't mean like bombing the shit out of a captive populace and using that technology to bring back home the prey upon marginalized communities. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like, whether it's Zadie who went to Cambridge or Theo who goes to Stanford, or like, you know, any of the people, you know, like naysaying what's going on at Columbia as like, you know, a Columbia graduate, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't like them breaking windows. But the point is, like, to go to an Ivy League or like an elite academic institution, like any of the ones I mentioned, it's like, obviously the goal is they want you to be a smart, well-informed, politically engaged global citizen. They want you to be like, you know, to speak passionately about the things you care about. But like, what they really want is to educate you to be just dumb enough, or rather like to educate you to be smart enough to like, to know where the guardrails are and to be like, to find intelligent ways to say, give voice to incredibly stupid opinions. And like, and I think what they're seeing now is this frustration that, like you said, like these kids have taken the essential, like what they were told were like their values and the mission of an institution like Columbia, they've taken it too seriously. Yeah. And then now they need to be sort of disciplined.
Yeah. It was cool though when, you know, they were doing climate stuff, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was that climate day of action when students walked out, right? It was even cool to some extent, right, with the Democratic Party, enough that they could co-opt the message and subsume it, right, with Black Lives Matter, you know what I'm saying? But when it comes to something where, like, I'm saying, when I went to the D.C. rally, dog, and it was 500,000 people there, I don't think all those people are communists, right? I don't think all those people, like, most of those people probably vote for Joe Biden, right? But the fact that so many people are becoming conscious, right, to this country's position and role in the world and the shit that we fund and do, you know what I'm saying, that's reflected in Israel, you know? I don't know, man. I hope that's a paradigm shift, you know?
I think you're completely right. I think that really since October, a lot of the cause of anguish among like Zionists and, you know, their allies in the American security state, it hasn't so much been the fact that there are protests. It's been that they have this incredibly broad appeal with all types of people from all avenues of life across various socioeconomic categories, that if these protests and the ones last year that we saw in, you know, almost every major American city, if they had been attended by like a quarter of the amount of people, we would not be seeing any of this shit. You know, maybe here and there we would see like a Forward article that's like, you know, the new Kristallnacht on campus. But like in normal publications, they like mostly wouldn't be having this crisis moment. But yeah. Like, you know, this is obviously a loaded term, right? But seeing normal people, more or less, that is to say, you know, people who maybe weren't engaged with this before, and this is the first time that they're really learning about this, engage with it, is like a major crisis point for all of this.
Just to follow up on Felix, something you said about like quote unquote normal people demonstrating on behalf of Palestine and being, you know, against Israel. I gotta say, I'd like to give a shout out to some not normal people. You know, contra Zadie,
real freaks.
So it's contra Zadie and Theo Baker. I had to give like Chapo honor roll to like over the past week. I've seen several of our former ops posting like their Black September. And I just got to give a special shout out to Leah McElrath, the Beto Cavs Cramps lady, Angry Black lady, and Terrell Starr are all going hard against Biden and for Palestine right now. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Where did this come from?
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's losing those people, it is really bad for him.
Dude, when I saw that he lost the Cavs Cramps lady, that is like... it's like if Will.i.am was like, I don't like Obama anymore. It's so crazy.
Yeah. Common quits the Hillary Clinton campaign. You
know? Yeah. But in the spirit of reconciliation, you know, much respect to them.
I mean, I've been trying to be a little bit more positive, you know, nowadays, because this shit is bleak as fuck, you know what I mean? But I think at least like my mom, for example, I always use her as a barometer, you know? My mom and a lot of people unequivocally are like, this is fucked up. But the issue is that I don't, like, if we're talking like electorally, you know what I mean? Like, if we even want to get in that conversation, which is a whole nother thing, like, I don't know if this is enough to like prevent those people from voting for Biden. Like, I think that non-committed vote, the power in that vote is a lot, you know? That means a lot. That means, that says to people like, yo, we won't vote for you no matter what. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I got one more thing on Biden and will people vote for him? Mm. Now, I love this story because, like, in New York State, we saw like we saw this playbook being run like 2 years ago. But I'm talking about, like, this is the Los Angeles Times headline: Biden's big move on marijuana. Will voters give him credit? And it says, for the past decade, a huge gap has separated marijuana policies Americans want from the ones the federal government enforces. Few issues exist on which the gap has been wider and more consistent. The Biden administration soon will take a big step forward, bringing federal policy on weed more in line with what the public says it prefers. That's the way democracy is supposed to work. In politics, as in show business, give the people what they want is a pretty reliable guide to success. So, like, yeah, there's been some indication that Biden will, like, I don't know, deschedule marijuana, or, like, as you said, like, have something, some more liberal drug legalization regime here. But I love when that's sort of like, yes, this is the way democracy is supposed to work. Give people what they want.
Yeah.
No, not ending this horrible genocide we're having, but have some weed.
First of all, dog, nigga, I've been smoking weed nonstop for the past 7 months, man. It don't matter if that shit is legal, bro. I don't give a fuck at this point. I cannot raw dog reality right now, bro. But we talked about this on the show. Tom, this is something you brought up. Like the way they throw out these, like, running up to the election, like, especially when they're in the shitter, but they do this all the time. They just throw out this piecemeal shit. You know what I'm saying? They throw out shit, especially domestically, to, like, I mean, that's the theme of this whole conversation, really, to, like, distract you. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know, man. It's like, didn't he do something with weed where he said that if you were locked up for, like, nonviolent drug offenses, but it didn't apply to migrants, it didn't apply to people who weren't citizens, you know? So even if he does this shit, it always has caveats to it. And it doesn't distract the fact that there were over 34,000 people dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I just want to say that, like, in the polling, I was telling some people this weekend, like, I know Trump is ahead in the polls right now, but, like, there's a lot of stuff packed into those polls that you are not going to necessarily disaggregate. Like, for example, when I talk to my conservative family members, they're like, it's kind of whiplash, because I get on Twitter and people are like, Trump's going to win, Trump 2.0. But then I talk to my family members and they're like, Biden's going to win, Like, there's no way. And I'm like, and I'm like, what do you mean? Like, walk me through this. And they're like, well, Biden's just gonna steal it again. It's like, okay, like, you've lost faith in the electoral process. Interesting, brother.
Oh yeah, brother.
It's so there's some interesting things there that I have said for months now. I think the worst possible outcome would be Biden winning. I don't, and so that's why I think he probably will win. And I do feel, and I have felt this for a while now, and we've talked about it on the show, but like, I do feel like very much that the liberals have finally completed their encirclement of the Trump forces. Like, I've been thinking about this for a while, like Larry Summers coming out a few years ago and saying that we need to like restore a family wage, like the family Fordist wage and this kind of stuff. Like, they really did see Trump as such a shock. Like, they really saw him as such a aberration, both culturally and economically, that they were really like intent on encircling him on pretty much every affront. And so whether it came from Israel, Palestine to the border or even the economy, they were willing to co-opt all of the Trump platforms. And, you know, and I even saw someone today, I think it was like Jeet here. I don't know the guy. I don't have any feelings about him one way or the other. But he had, quote, tweeted something about how Biden people were very obviously putting out signals that they were trying to capture those heartlanders who were disaffected by Dobbs. They voted for Trump the first time, but not going to vote for him again. And Jeet was like, well, it's a bold strategy. We'll see how it pans out for them. And I kind of think it will pan out for them. I think this has been their whole strategy since October 8th. I think that to me, and I could be wrong, but I do very much feel like they have been trying to pander to that crowd. Once they got Dobbs in their back pocket, they knew that that was their sort of get out of jail free card. That shored them up. And again, who knows? We've all been sitting around for months trying to understand their complete obstinance on this, because it doesn't even fully make sense, even if you do take into account that they don't see Palestinians as humans, because they don't. But I mean, even then, I don't know. It's just
we've talked about on the show. It's like you're anchoring yourself, you know, Israel as this Cronenbergian mass flesh creature. You know what I'm saying? That is like dying, right? It's not even supposed to have lived as long as it did. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's supposed to live 24 hours.
It's Brendelfly in the final stage. Yeah. Grabbing the shotgun and just putting it to its throat.
Kill me now. Or actually, I'll kill all of you. And the fact that we're like this country is anchoring itself to that. I mean, we've talked about on the show, right? Maybe there are a lot of whether economic relationships or cultural relationships, or just the fact that, yeah, this is a product of settler colonialism, right? Well, to indict Israel would be to indict the United States, you know?
I listened to y'all's episode with Riley from Trash Future last week. And as I was listening to this, I was like, man, I mean, because if it is true, like Keir Starmer is the future, right, of the UK. It's like, for years, everybody was
fucking
like,
Star Trek-ass sounding name, man.
Sorry, right. For years, everybody was like, oh, sorry, you know. The future is right wing, right? It's these right wing populist movements. It's Trump, it's Le Pen, it's Orban, it's all this. But what if the more terrifying future is that the future is liberal? They managed to like put this liberal, like very like sort of technocratic, like able administrative face on this. And I mean, that is a very tough pill for a lot of people to swallow, even myself included, someone who's like, you know, radical leftist in all this. It's hard to deal with.
I tend to believe that it's like the future is both, in the sense that we're going to see, like, you know, each chair a generation both sort of hobbling towards the finish line. Like, I definitely agree that, like, you know, liberal forces in America especially have like encircled Trump, and, you know, have outflanked him on many things, and Trump has, you know, even with his advantages going into this, his innate disadvantage is that he's already a known quantity. People have already experienced it. That's the worst thing that he can have going for him electorally. He cannot run as an outsider quite in the same way. And he cannot, you know, people like to forget this, but when he won because the majority of voters saw him as the moderate choice.
Right.
And that probably will not be the case this time. But I think both are uniquely skilled at sort of handicapping and encircling the other. But, you know, this era of governing America is so, it's like being the mayor of a big city. It, your job is just to get yelled at this point. Right. The fun's over for the most part. Yeah, and I'm no more a believer in like a permanent like Keir Starmerization of future politics than I am of or than I was of like a Trumpification of all politics in like 2017. I think just both are so feeble, yet there are so few other options at the moment that it's just they're going to trade off like one term presidencies for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen. You say, like, these are our two possible futures. They look pretty bleak. Doesn't seem like there's a third option. I would like to close out today by sharing with you a possible third future. A possible future that we could have.
And
before I share this with you, Tom, Aaron, Terrence, are you familiar with Patrick Bet-David?
Oh, my.
Oh yeah,
who's the most? The hell is he not Israeli guy that ever lived?
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, you know, if you guys thought this guy was Israeli, you know, forgiven, because I thought that too. Patrick Bet-David, and he owns a channel called Infotainment, and he's not Israeli. How could it be?
He kind of organizes like the verses for mafia turncoats, right?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Patrick Bet-David. Anyone where like Vlad TV is like, I think this guy's lying about being in the mafia. Someone who doesn't quite meet Vlad standards. Patrick Bet-David is like, I'll have him on. whenever you see a guy who's like wearing a rumpled suit and is like, I killed 480 people for the mafia. He does a lot of that and like business interviews. Like, he'll talk to like a 23-year-old who owns 30 Airbnbs and be like, when did you start learning about the secrets of success business?
Well, he's a guy that understands success and he understands leadership. So, Chris, can we have that Patrick Bet-David clip?
Yesterday, we're with Barron Trump. Barron's a very interesting guy, the son of Donald Trump, 6'7", 6'8". We're doing a podcast with Ryan Garcia. He stays there and he walks. He says, let me walk you to your car. The son of a billionaire who's a president says, let me walk you to your car. He's working customer service. He walks us to our car and he's standing there until we get in the car to leave. He says, look, no matter what I do, no matter what my brothers do, no matter how much money we make, our success will never come close to what our father had to do, because he really had the hard life, not us. Say something like that, right?
Yeah, okay. All right. I love he said yesterday we're with Barron Trump. Barron Trump, 6'7", 6'8". He's giving his stats.
Yeah.
And then he said, who's he walking to his car? He's walking Ryan Garcia to his car. Like,
is he the guy that did the air boxing?
He's trying to pick up Ryan Garcia.
He's the guy that did the shadow boxing for Trump and then just failed the drug test.
Yeah. Didn't he like chug a beer and like fuck up his way or something the other day?
Ryan Garcia is like, he's not, like, he lost to Gervonta Davis,
right?
But he's like a pretty good boxer. And he won his last fight in part because he sort of pretended to go crazy, but actually really did go crazy, but not too crazy to stop doing road work or anything. Like, he still trained, and that was smart, I thought.
He went muscle memory crazy. Like, he still had the muscle memory enough to complete his job.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was in the gym every day. He just, like, was also going crazy. But, the video of him shadowboxing in front of Trump is so fucking funny.
It's so good, dude.
It's like, that is such a funny idea like to meet the president and be like, look how long I can hold my breath.
Yeah. No, Felix, like, you said that. I was like, when, if like my parents' friends came by and I'd be like, can I put on my rollerblades in the house and show them?
Yeah. I can stand on my head.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh man. But you know, like, so we also, like, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, they're fucking mummies. These guys are ancient. Like, how can we get out of this? The answer is the Baron Trump Imperium. Because, like, you know, it's always said the taller man usually wins an election.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we got that's gonna beat Baron Trump? 6'7", 6'8". He's 6'7", 6'8", and he walks grown men to their cars. And in my favorite comment in this, he says, he says, I want to let you know, everything me and my brothers have, it's nothing without the struggle that our dad went through. He really had it hard. What?
That's amazing. Like, Donald Trump, he was like Axl Rose in Sweet Child of Mine. He shows up to New York off a bus with a fresh piece of hay still in his mouth. Straight from the Trump farm in like Indiana, and he's like, I'm gonna make something of myself. I'm gonna build this empire piece by piece. I'll hammer in all the nails.
I think the hardest that Trump had to work at was like convincing his friends that his parents weren't like aliens, that just because, you know, like they're like fucked up, like Cronenberg heads, like they've got like their ears are on their necks.
Listen, man, I know I've said this before on the show, but and I'm serious, man. I've never understood why phrenology. I mean, I get it, right? But phrenology should be a thing for weird white people head like that. You know what I'm saying? That is like, he has like the head of his father has the head of a xenomorph. You know what I'm saying?
I need to know, like, right? Come on. What are the intergalactic species?
Is that Scottish, German, and Dutch? Is that what he comes from?
I need to know what Jakob was cooking. You know, he came up with that shit. You know what
that's an ungodly combination.
I posted a picture of his dad once, and this conservative guy was like, oh, yeah? Oh, you think he looks bad? Well, guess what? He had jaw cancer. And it's like, well, clearly. I mean, like, I would actually line him up with other people who got jaw cancer and say he's one of the worst looking people to ever get it.
Yeah, Roger Ebert had jaw cancer. I'd rather look at Roger Ebert.
Yeah, well, Roger Ebert, he did a smart move. I think this is smart for anyone who's aging, jaw cancer or no. It's the William Shatner move where you just like gain a little weight every year after 70.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a good move. Mm-hmm. If Fred Trump had done that, probably no jaw cancer.
And he would have got to go to space too, like William Shatner. Too, man. You know?
Exactly.
Well, there we go. You know, Baron Trump will be our next Alexander the Great. He just has to. I mean, look, he's very polite. He can hold the door for boxers and other politicians.
He's tall.
He's tall. He just has to work on talking.
Yeah, that's the thing that'll get you. Unfortunately,
I've never heard him speak. That's true.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Reason for that.
The trad guys think he's the Augustus. That's the comparison I see the most.
Yeah.
The Octavian Augustus.
Yeah, he's Caesar's nephew. You know, yeah. All right, let's leave it there for today. Trillbillies, Tom, Aaron, Terrence, thank you so much for joining us today. And everyone, please subscribe, like, and just partake in the Trillbillies experience if you haven't done so already.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having us, boys.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
All right, gang. Till next time. Bye-bye.